Hello, welcome to another Tech Lounge with me, Christian Chiller. And I am rounding off the last episode with another interview with another author who has a book coming out on Manning. This time it is the turn of Luca Belli, who has a book coming out called Hidden Influences, all about how algorithmic recommendation systems work. And it's not necessarily a technical book, it is to a degree, but it's also an ethical book. It's a book about how these things work, and I suppose the decisions about whether that's good or bad are up to you and Luca to decide. So in this episode, we talk about the book, his decisions around what goes into it, and yes, how these algorithms are now really running our lives. If you're interested in getting yourself a copy, it is currently on their early access program, but you can get a copy on that early access program or any other books with my personal discount link, which is go.christianchiller.com/Manning. And let's jump right into the interview. I can see from your background that you're in San Francisco, or maybe Lisbon. I don't know. Maybe you're surprising me with the bridge picture.
San Francisco, yes. Yep. Good morning, everyone.
And you're working on a book at the moment. It was an interesting one because you're one of many authors I've had from Manning who were generally talking about more sort of technical books. And on the surface, yours doesn't necessarily seem like that. I'm not sure. It feels slightly more philosophical, maybe. Or maybe you're telling people how to build systems like this because the book is around hidden influences, which is a very interesting title to suddenly see on a book list. So yeah, what in your mind is the core of the book? Let's just go for that.
Yeah, thanks for noticing. Yeah, I think you're completely right. This is not a technical manual. If you read this book, you will not learn how to build a recommender system. I think there is plenty of manuals and other technical books for this topic. What I am more interested in is to have a socio-technical view of things. And what I mean by that is that our technology should not be studied by itself in abstract, but it actually reacts with how people interact with that. And I think recommender systems are a great example of that, right? Because, you know, they shape us and we shape them in some sense. We look at a bunch of recommendations that the recommender system bring to us. Imagine like in a social media feed.
Yeah.
And then we interact with some of them. That information gets fed back to the recommender system for future recommendation. But they also changed us in the sense that, you know, maybe they showed us something that we didn't know we were interested in. And so if you do this cycle enough times, it's really a two-way story here. It's not just a one-way.
Okay. And so what's the intention of the book? Is the book to help someone build one of these? Or are you trying to encourage people not to build these or build better recommendation systems? Like, yeah, what's the intention of the book?
I would say, in general, the goal of the book is to give people a better understanding of the systems. There has been, and there still is a lot of discussion around, for example, societal impacts of the system. There is a lot of questions around, you know, information diffusion, including not limited to misinformation, a topic that it's possibly even more relevant now with, you know, rise of generative AI and where everyone can craft their own sort of misinformation campaign, you know, from their own computer, right? And so really the problem is how this information gets spread, which is the recommender system job, right? And what I've noticed is that a lot of people have the discussion around this recommender system, I felt like was lacking some of the nuance. Like, things are much more complicated than they seem, especially for the reason I mentioned before of, you know, user and technology interacting together. And, you know, the fundamental question behind the book is, what does it mean for a recommender system to work properly?
Okay.
And my point is, it's complicated and there is no single answer, right? Yeah. If you have any other system, you can usually measure things like accuracy or, you know, sort of other metrics that are much more clear when something is working versus when something is not working. Mm-hmm. Recommender systems have to take into account preferences, which are very personal. And so, you know, when you're looking at a dashboard, you know, at a level sort of like at the platform, and you're asking, is the system working properly? You know, I want to ask the follow-up question, which is like, what does it mean to work properly and for whom is working properly? And so the goal of the book is really to bring this nuance to the conversation and to try to explain to a non-technical audience, especially, what are the parts that are important, why a recommender system are different, and why they should care about that.
Okay. And so what's your background? Like, why did you want to write this book in the first place? Did you work on these kind of systems and you sort of saw the dark underbelly?
Yes, exactly. So my background, you know, I studied math, pure math, so mm-hmm. nothing to do with anything that has to do with reality, really. But, you know, after that, I worked in the software industry for a few years, became a data scientist, ML engineer, all that stuff. In 2017, I joined Twitter, which was a very different company at the time, let me tell you that. And I was very fortunate to be, I think, at the right time, at the right place. And I was able to co-found the machine learning ethic, transparency, and accountability there, meaning a team that was devoted to thinking about this meta question around recommender system. And I think, you know, my time at Twitter ended in November of 2022 with the acquisition that many people might remember about. And however, I felt there was still a lot to say on this topic, even after I was not at the company anymore. And so this book is sort of like a way for me to do that. And especially, again, not focusing on a single technology, right? I'm not saying, you know, to build a recommender system, you should use XYZ algorithm. It's more about the entire ecosystem, like from user to... So that's where it came from.
Okay. And why now? And recommender systems are not necessarily that new, but I think you sort of make a good point that they are... Well, how much... I mean, actually, let's ask that question. How much are they now feeding into a lot of AI tools? Because a lot of what people think of now as AI tools are a particular brand of AI tool, but machine learning, recommender systems, all these sorts of things are not new. Are they a part of, you know, if I go and use a ChatGPT or something like this and I'm asking its opinions on something, are there recommender systems behind that as well, or are they sort of still rather separate from each other?
That's a great question. And to be quite honest, I'm not exactly sure how they're implementing that. You know, I think one of the core tenets of recommender system is they have a fixed set of items that they reshuffle versus I think generative AI, even when you're asking for recommendation of things, sort of it generates. I mean, there's like RAG and other things happening in the background possibly. But I think to answer your question, like why now? I mean, you're right that most of the attention nowadays is focused on something else. And, you know, those are very important, impactful tool. But we maybe tend to forget how much we still rely on recommender system. Mm. Most people, or most young people especially, get their information from social media. And social media obviously has embraced generative AI in various forms. Different platforms have embraced in different forms. But it's still fundamentally still a stream of things that comes to you and in which an algorithm, you know, picks the order in some sense, right? So this is, I would even argue at this point, this is infrastructure of, no one talks about it as infrastructure because it's all in the hands of, you know, a private company. They're not regulated as utilities and all that stuff. But point being, we rely so much on that we kind of forgot. Like it became this technology that's invisible to us.
Yeah.
And that's when you realize it's actually very important because, like, think about, you know, how much we rely on matters to make sense of the world, right? There is a lot of this like theory in psychology where we form an opinion about a topic by looking at our peers and what they think about that, and we adjust our opinion around it, right? And so this is, you know, transpose that to recommender system where your peers are not necessarily the people in your, you know, small village or your tribe like that live physically near you. And so how we form an opinion on topics, on important topics in the world is literally shaped by by this technology. And the last point I'll add is, you know, people tend maybe to forget, but a lot of the training data for generative AI models come from social media. And,
yeah,
you know, obviously these are, it's, you know, it's proprietary secret or IP secrets of how AI labs are doing that. But it's possible that, you know, pieces of content that are more popular tend to end up be more likely to end up or maybe weighted more in this training data. So there's another aspect to that.
Do you think, like, I feel like a lot of recommender systems and algorithmic recommendations often get flagged in a bad way? Are there positive ones? From a human perspective? Obviously, they're positive from a business perspective, but from a human perspective.
I mean, this is a very tough one to answer, to be honest. And, you know, I was asking the same question. I've been asking the same question for months, right? Because I feel like even in my book, I tend to talk a lot of the problems. But what about the positives? Are there any? Is there any, you know, can recommend a system be saved in some sense, right? I mean, I would say a couple of things, though. One, there is the sense of community. Like, yes, it's true that they have a lot of problems, but they really also help us connect with others that might be impossible to connect with in, you know, sort of like in the real physical world because distance or other problems. Think about all the social movements that sort of started as basically viral campaigns online, from, you know, the Black Lives Matter to Me Too movement. So these are definitely, I would argue, these are very strong positive in favor. People that might feel very isolated, you know, sometimes people find their community online because their physical community cannot or does not want to accept them. You know, thinking about the queer kid that lives, you know, in the middle of nowhere that might not be accepted by their family or their immediate kin. And so having a community online really helps. But of course, you know, when we talk about generating communities can generate around positive and love, positive sentiments and love or hatred. So it's the problem is, you know, this technology are content agnostic, right? And so everything can be used for good and evil in that sense. But
it's one of those interesting things because I've actually stopped using Instagram. But when I was using it, I remember the ads would often be so bizarrely appropriate for me. I honestly didn't mind them so much because they actually had some interesting things. But then we have the complete other side where we see the sort of propagation of untruths through social media because they spark engagement. But is recommender and engagement algorithms the same thing in your mind?
No, that's a great question. I mean, some argue that the engagement optimized recommender system are the problem, not recommender system by itself.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the point boils down to picking an optimization goal, right? So you have to tell your algorithm, your when you train a model, you have to say, hey, optimize so that the thing that have this property are more likely to bubble up. What we really want to do is to have rank higher pieces of content that are more valuable for the reader. The problem is, what does valuable mean? It's this like concept that cannot be measured, right?
Yeah.
And especially, again, cannot be measured universally because what's valuable to me might be different from what's valuable to you. And even, you know, even more, what's valuable to me at a certain point might be different from what's valuable to me at a different point, right? In the morning, you might want to read more news. In the evening, you're tired, you might want to read more, or you want to cat or memes or that kind of stuff. And so the problem, and I would even argue that my book is basically a book about measurement.
Mm.
And because we cannot measure value, which is this abstract quantity that it's impossible to measure, we have to find something else we can measure. And so people said, well, engagement seems a good proxy, right? If you engage with something, it means it's interesting to you. And the more you engage with that, the more it has to be interesting to you. Now, in principle, that is true. In practice, we know it's not, right? Mm. Because, or, I mean, it might be true up to a point, but there is all these other externalities, again, such as, people, clickbait titles, right? Or clickbait content or that kind of stuff is something that exploiting the engagement base, but does not bring value. And so we have this like fork between this goal of the optimization, again, value that we cannot optimize for, and the actual measurable, quantity, which is engagement, which is what then people went for. And then, again, because these are all computer system, people have this number, they have a metric, and they can say, I can track this number, and, my job as an engineer or a designer of the system is to make this number to go up or go down, depending on how you measure it. And so that is also very easy for, someone in a company or company themselves to like reason about the systems.
Yeah.
But then you're sort of like crushing all these other effects. Like you don't see them, all this like societal impact. They don't really fit in that single number. But then sort of like, this is a problem that people either, ignored, or they say, this is for later. And then this later never came.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I was saying that to someone earlier, how, a classic example is something like Airbnb. I don't think the founders of Airbnb ever intended to create a company that ruined the rental markets of various major cities, but no one ever really stopped to think about, outside of the kind of idealistic Silicon Valley world, what's the worst that could happen? And for a brief period of time, companies were employing philosophers and things like this, but I think those days are past again. Maybe they'll come back, but yeah, it's not trackable. The unintended consequences, it's hard to know, hard to track when you don't know what they're going to be, I suppose.
Yeah, and a lot of these unintended consequences, some of them could have been predicted, and company could have listened or asked, researchers that were doing research in the area for decades.
Mm.
But also, I know that Silicon Valley companies love to, market themselves as changing the world for the better. But at the end of the day, we also have to remember that these are venture capital enterprise funded companies, and they are for-profit companies. And so, sure, there is some externalities, there is some other, maybe side effects, but what, the top-level metric that a company is going to track at the end of the day is like the company valuation. Like every founder wakes up in the morning saying, how increase the evaluation of my company, how increase the usage, how increase this and that, right? And so that's why it's also hard to do this work from the inside, because obviously there is an established business model that you have to dance around, right? You cannot just say, let's close the engagement-based recommender system, and then that will make them better.
Okay. So when it comes to the idea of writing a book, I've written a few books myself, and sometimes you have a fantastic idea that you, and then you get about two chapters in and you're like, why did I agree to this? So how in the kind of the perspective and the angle that you have proposed here so far, what is the book going to cover? Are you going to like break apart algorithms you know about, or like how you theorize about how you think they work, or what's the intended structure of the book?
Yeah, so my main goal for this book is to make it timeless, meaning I didn't want to think or talk about a specific algorithm, a specific, anything, just because the moment you write down about that, it's already old and outdated. Especially, we live in this world where every 2 months there is a new model that like crashes everything that existed until that point, right? So what I've done instead, it was sort of like talk about frameworks. And so there is a section where, you know, there is more like a peek under the hood in the world of recommendation. And so, again, not talking about specific algorithm, but like generally speaking, how, like what happens when you, for example, try to refresh your timeline, your social media feed or whatnot, right? And so having just very, very broad, stroke, like what is happening under the hood. And especially, you know, I'm hoping this will be helpful to policymakers who are in charge of writing a policy for the system, but maybe they never work with the system themselves. Yeah. So at least having these very general, you know, sort of ways of a framework to think how something work. And I also wanted to bring a little more nuance to the discussion, especially, for example, when it for content moderation, everyone says companies should do better, which I 100% agree with. But also, I don't think people realize how complex the issue is. And so, you know, bringing some example there, trying to explain why this work is complicated. Then there is a second part, which is more around measurement. And so try to, you know, come up with definition or coming up with definition of like, what is algorithmic amplification and how do we measure that? And what does it mean, again, for a system to work properly? What do we do with that? Then there is a part on societal impact, where, you know, I talk about some of the impacts that we know happen and I explore why certain things happen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a mixture of the psychology and like what guides us as humans, but also like the technology. And then sort of like a finally, like, what should we do about that, both as a society and as people, you know, are there any things that we can do as individuals to maybe be less reliant or maybe on a more societal level to have better ways of dealing with this new infrastructure that is not technical infrastructure yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And what is your, you know, this is, I always think there's these areas of content in or advice or practices in the technical world where it's like, here's how to do what you're doing better. Here's another thing to factor into to what you're already doing to improve it, to make it better for society, et cetera, et cetera. And we also know, based on kind of what you said with the growth mindset or the engineering mindset, is often it's like, oh, another thing to do. So what's your pitch on why this is important to read and to follow?
I think for me, you know, the main thing is to have sort of like a meta awareness around the system and their incentive that they're built with and the incentives of the company they're built, you know, within. There's an entire chapter actually about, you know, sort of like Silicon Valley company and like the incentive that drives them and like trying to demystify all this, you know, we are here to change the world type thing. And just because more often than not, we just start using the system, we start just scrolling and then, you know, 2 hours later it's like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Where the last 2 hours went. And obviously this is by design. And so I think that by being more aware on why the system work and like, again, what was the goal that they were trained with, that will help us and think about, well, if I don't want to spend 2 hours on this, what should I do? Can I protect myself? And obviously, you know, what are some psychological tricks I can employ to sort of like stop? And the other part of that is just like raise awareness again, that I think, especially now where there's been an increasing number of regulation or other policies around recommender system, I would say less so in the United States, but more in Europe and elsewhere. You know, I think it's still important to keep sort of raising awareness to make sure that these efforts don't just, you know, disappear or you know, not enforced maybe.
Okay. And are there, you know, for a lot of these, often we like to have kind of common tools or frameworks or things. Are there like common patterns in building these systems that you recommend people follow?
You mean when someone is like trying to build a recommender system from scratch or?
Yes, but I guess in the sort of way that you're hopefully proposing, are there like best practice ethical patterns you can follow?
I think, you know, a big one that maybe relates a little bit of what I was saying earlier is like when people look at results in aggregate, again, because people are, you know, are looking maybe a single metric, maybe engagement, try to, you know, go up or down and so forth. This is obviously easy, and I understand when you're dealing with like hundreds of millions of users, you cannot look one by one. But an important question to always ask is, are there any subpopulation, for example, that might not show up in an aggregate result because they are, maybe they're smaller, and yet the system is might not be working for them as well? I'll give a very different example, but I think it's relevant. If I'm building a medical test for a, you know, some sort of ailment that only 1% of the population suffers from, right? I could have a test that always says that you don't have the, you know, the ailment. On paper, this test has 99% accuracy because, you know, only 1% of the people suffer from it. But this is a useless test, right? And so my point is, when you look only at aggregates, you might lose a lot of these nuances. And so I know it's difficult, especially when you're building a global platform that you want to be culturally mindful, and, you know, every country has multiple cultures within it. So like how you deal with that.
Yeah.
But I think maybe my point here is just like, do not only look at things in aggregate, try also to look at subpopulations.
And so how is the book going? Like, are you, when's your intended finish and release date?
So I'm very close. Like, there's only two chapters left.
Okay, cool.
It's already online. So if you get it online now at unmanning.com, you actually have the, what they call MEEP, meaning you get the chapters that have been already written and reviewed. And then you'll obviously get the other ones as soon as they're completed. So I think as of now, you would get the first six chapters with two more sort of inbound soon. And then there's like two more left, and then we are done.
Okay. I probably have some kind of link I will put in the notes or add to the end of this recording once I go and find it. It usually exists. But yeah. And how have you found it? Like, having a sort of more, I don't want to say theoretical, because it's still somewhat practical, but there's, you know, I don't know if you're like showing lots of code or something like that, but how have you found writing it?
It's been quite a journey. I think, you know, it's one of these things where when you run a marathon, before you start the marathon, you're thinking this is going to be long and it's going to be very hard to finish. Towards the end, you really feel your body is tired and you really want to be at the end of it. But once you're on the other side, once you're done, you're happy and grateful to be done. So I, you know, it's been a great experience to be able to sit down and think more deeply about things that I would not have the time and advice to do. Mm-hmm. But I will also say I am very happy to be close to you.
I think this sounds the usual author. I would probably pretty much say exactly the same thing about any book I've ever written as well. So awesome. And in addition to the book, is there anywhere or anything you would like people to know about your other work? Or do you have a blog or a website? Or
lukab.phd is my website.
Okay.
And currently I am working on a very different field, and like safety of chatbots in a mental health context. So this has been quite a different...
I think it feels somewhat related, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's still, you know, impacts of technology, but everything can be found on my website. So happy to connect with folks if they have questions or...
Yep. Yep. Awesome. All right then. Well, good luck with finishing. And people should head over to manning.com, and I will put a more specific link in the notes. So, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. A great rest of your day.